I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. So much for civil liberties. The ACLU of Washington is backing an effort to intimidate voters they don't agree with. Plus, it is not MAGA extremism to want to keep your head above water. And unbelievable regulations are making housing in our state more expensive.
So you add $9,000, $30,000 onto the cost of the home, and you're just totally, totally exploding the cost and the access to home ownership, and even it increases rents too.
Plus, Jonathan Cho details how the migrant crisis is reaching Washington. All of that and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our independent show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you want to keep more of your own money, you are a mega right-wing extremist. If you want your communities to be safer, you are a mega right-wing extremist. If you want to parent your kids, you are a mega right-wing extremist. And if you dare to exercise the rights given to you by our state constitution to petition your government for a redress of grievances, you are a mega right-wing extremist. That's what the Washington State Democratic Party thinks. That's not hyperbole. That's what they're saying. They have now elevated their efforts to silence the voices and silence the votes of Washingtonians who do not agree with them, of Washingtonians who have the audacity to put pen to paper and sign initiatives to undo some of the policies that one-party rule in this state has forced upon them. There are few issues since I've been doing this job that have angered me quite like this one. We have a party in Washington state who, rightfully so, called out Republicans, continued to call out the Republican Party for what happened at our nation's capital, for the belief that that was an effort to overturn the results of an election, that that was an attack on democracy, and I agree. But now you have a Democratic Party in Washington state that is embarking on a series of actions that I believe serves to do the same thing. Serves to disenfranchise voters and to shut people up who they don't agree with. And for the life of me, I cannot understand how the same elected officials who spoke out about what happened at our nation's capital, how the same elections officials who spoke out about what happened at our nation's capital, how the media outlets that covered relentlessly what happened at our nation's capital seem to not care when there is an attack on democracy happening so blatantly and out in the open in Washington state. I am, of course, talking about efforts from the Washington State Democratic Party to stifle six initiatives that appear to be heading to the state legislature this year. Most of them are anti-tax initiatives. Most of them are initiatives that seek to repeal taxes that have been forced on working-class Washingtonians by Democrats who are in charge of the state legislature. There's also an initiative that has to do with repealing what have been incredibly dangerous and detrimental so-called police reforms. And the Washington State Democratic Party just cannot let that happen. They cannot let the people of Washington do something that's protected by the Constitution, and that is the process of an initiative, the process of a referendum, and they don't want them to vote. They don't want them to have a chance to vote directly on some of these policies that have deeply impacted their lives. And as I said, this is happening blatantly. This isn't something happening, you know, in secrecy behind closed doors. The Washington State Democratic Party, again, is calling on Washingtonians to snitch on their fellow Washingtonians for signing initiatives, for collecting signatures for initiatives. The tweet sent out by the Washington State Democratic Party: the extreme Washington GOP is teaming up with the mega rich to pass a set of ballot initiatives that would hurt working Washingtonians. Defeat the MAGA GOP's extreme ballot initiatives. Decline to sign any initiatives right now. Spread the word and call the hotline to report signature gatherers. Think about that for a second. Call the hotline to report signature gatherers. Now, we've talked on the show about that hotline effort. It was previously being pushed by a progressive think tank, essentially, that's just run by a citizen called Fuse. And that was bad enough, and we talked about it on the show, but now it is blatantly being pushed by the Washington State Democratic Party, a party that, again, for the last, 3 years has told us that our democracy is in peril because of Republicans. And now they are saying, if you see someone out there collecting, lawfully collecting signatures from Washington voters, that you should call a hotline, report their location, so they can send people out there to harass them. And that's what's happening on the ground. Signature gatherers have reported that they've felt harassed, that they've felt intimidated, that they have felt as if people who they're talking to see if they want to sign the initiatives, that those people are being harassed and intimidated out of doing so. That is a threat to our democratic process. And the Washington State Democratic Party is endorsing it, plain as day. And as if that isn't bad enough, look, they're a political entity. You know what I think of political parties. So let's just say I don't think very highly of the Washington State Democratic Party. Now, I wouldn't put it past a political party to do something like this that is good for them. But to make matters even worse, joining them is an entity that we're supposed to believe exists to protect and fight for the civil liberties of all Americans, of all Washingtonians, regardless of political ideology, the ACLU. The ACLU of Washington, the American Civil Liberties Union of Washington State, is also endorsing this voter intimidation effort. Think about that. Think about that. Right now, on their website, they are first and foremost calling on people to decline to sign two of the initiatives, which is fine. You have every right, free speech right in the world, to try to convince people that they shouldn't sign the initiatives. I have no problem with that. Specifically, what they're saying in this post is not to sign the initiative related to allowing police more leeway to pursue violent criminals. And then another initiative, which states, for the record, that parents are the primary stakeholder in their children's lives. But they go on to, again, share a hotline set up by Democrats that encourages Washingtonians to intimidate fellow Washingtonians for the crime of participating in a lawful part of our democratic process, the ACLU of Washington. That is horrifying. And look, I know that the ACLU isn't what it used to be, and it certainly doesn't stand up for the civil liberties of every American. They have a political agenda, obviously. They're sharing a Democrat snitch line. They only care about the civil liberties of people who agree with them. They don't care about your civil liberties. And really, again, I encourage you to think about what's at the heart of these initiatives. You know, Democrats in their posts want to say that this is, if these initiatives pass, it's hurting working Washingtonians. It's hurting working Washingtonians. To lower gas prices by getting rid of the carbon tax? It's hurting working Washingtonians to get rid of a long-term care tax that nobody even wanted for a program that's not even going to be solvent? It's hurting working Washingtonians to ensure that Democrats don't try to push through an unconstitutional income tax again? It's hurting working Washingtonians to improve the safety in their communities and to give the police the tools they need to be able to hold criminals accountable. It's working Washingtonians who are bearing the brunt of the crime crisis. It's not hurting working Washingtonians. It's hurting you. It's hurting the Democratic Party. And so not only have they relied on lies and gaslighting and labels, MAGA extremism, like I said, you want to protect your family's budget, you want to make sure you can provide for your family, well, you're nothing more than a MAGA right-wing extremist. Bad enough that they're doing that and lying about the initiatives hurting working Washingtonians. I could put all that aside. Again, political party, political nonsense. But when you've got the ACLU and the Washington State Democratic Party urging the harassment of lawful signature gatherers, that should be something that the Secretary of State, that every county election official in the state, that the governor, that the attorney general comes out and denounces. It should be something that the media is covering in earnest. Why isn't it? And I would point out, because it is something that I personally condemned a year ago, and I have the receipts, because on this show, we judge actions, not affiliation. We set our moral compass and we stay the course, regardless of what political party is engaged in what kind of bullshit. A year ago, leading up to the midterm election in 2022, there was an effort, in my mind and in the minds of many Democrats and members of the media, to intimidate voters. You might recall the story. The Seattle Times did a story on it. Republican activists organizing surveillance of ballot drop boxes in Washington. And they actually put a sign at the drop boxes saying they were being surveilled. Now, for any reasonable person, that's intimidating. You go up to drop your ballot in the drop box and you see a sign saying that that drop box is being surveilled? Yeah, I joined what was swift and overwhelming condemnation of those efforts, which were being carried out, it turned out, by a couple rogue members of the King County Republican Party. At the time when the Seattle Times reporting came out, it was July 18th, 2022, and elections officials, as they should, in King County and elsewhere, spoke out about this. The Seattle Times story says, King County election spokesperson Haley Watkins said the office received several reports about the signs popping up over the weekend. She said, certainly the signs out at the drop boxes are a little worrying. Thurston County Auditor Mary Hall, a Democrat, said she'd been alerted to the statewide surveillance effort. Says she doesn't understand what people running it expect it to prove. I'd characterize it as voter intimidation, she said. And how did the Republican Party respond? After all, this was being done by people who aligned themselves with Republicans. This was being done, the activists believe, for the sake of Republicans. Well, the King County Republican Party shut it down. And they spoke out about it too. Talk about moral consistency. Matthew Patrick Thomas, chair of the King County Republican Party, said in an interview Monday morning he had not been aware of local GOP volunteers who were placing the signs near ballot boxes until he got a call over the weekend from the King County Elections Director. Thomas said he called Amber Krawback, a GOP activist and candidate who's helped lead the King County Republicans Election Integrity Committee, and said, "You guys have got to stop doing this." By Monday afternoon, Thomas entirely repudiated the effort, announcing he was dissolving the King County GOP's Election Integrity Committee. That's moral consistency. So you had, but a year ago, what was an act, whether that was the intention or not, that was the effect, was to intimidate voters. You had county elections officials who spoke out about it. The Secretary of State that spoke out about it. You had media outlets covering it. I covered it on this show. You had the Republican Party in King County, whose activist volunteers had done this without their consent, who then turned around and shut it down and spoke out about it, told them, you have to stop doing that. So you look at what's happening today with efforts from the Washington State Democratic Party to intimidate voters. And why are you not seeing the same level of bipartisan pushback? I will also note, a day after that Seattle Times story came out, the Washington State Democratic Party, using the same Twitter account they're using now to encourage the intimidation of voters, they spoke out against the efforts. A day later, the GOP efforts to intimidate voters, they said on Twitter, "We're calling on county auditors, voters, and elected officials across the state to denounce voter intimidation efforts from the Washington GOP." So when the other party's doing it, they want voter intimidation to be denounced. But a year later, they're the ones doing it. And who's going to denounce them? You either care about voter intimidation or you do not. You either care about protecting our democratic process or you do not. You don't get to pick and choose whether you care about protecting voters and their right to exercise those votes, or you do not. You don't get to pick and choose based on what the initiative is, the referendum is, based on who's on the ballot. The GOP was morally consistent when that happened a year ago. That is worth noting. The question is, are Democrats going to be morally consistent now? Clearly, the state party is not. But are county elections officials going to be morally consistent? Is the Secretary of State going to be morally consistent? Are Democratic voters who scream to high heaven, as they should have, as they were right to, about the riot at the state at the nation's capital, are they going to speak out and say that our democratic process is sacred? And that we have to fight for the rights of people to participate in the process, especially when we don't agree with them, because that's what this country is about. And I will just say this. This is what I want to say to the Washington State Democratic Party. And I want you to listen closely. However good you think you are at messaging on this issue, I promise you that I am better. Because you use fear, you use lies, and you use labels to get people to do what you want them to do and to think how you want them to think. We use the truth. And then we trust people to think for themselves. And in the long run, that is far more powerful. The people who you are encouraging to do this, the people who hang on your every word, are already people who are voting the way you want them to vote. The people who watch this show, they vote the way they want to vote. And they think critically. And they think independently. And they have far more power to influence elections. So go ahead. Keep degrading them. Keep vilifying them. Keep calling them MAGA right-wing extremists because they want to save a little money. Keep calling them MAGA right-wing extremists because they want their communities to be a little safer. Keep calling them MAGA right-wing extremists because they want to parent their kids. Go ahead and keep doing it. And see what happens in November. All right, that is not going to be the final word on this issue. We're going to address it again coming up at the end of the show. If I seem pissed off, I am pissed off. and I will freaking die on this hill. And I have demonstrated the moral clarity to be as angry about it as I am. Because after January 6th, I spoke out. After acts of voter intimidation from Republicans, I spoke out. I have spoken out about the bullshit, stolen election, ridiculousness. So I have the moral clarity and the receipts and the consistency to be mad about it. Democrats have not shown that. Okay, coming up next, our friend Jonathan Cho has been covering what is kind of an unexpected issue in Washington state. I mean, we know the immigration crisis is impacting us. It's impacting us in the amount of fentanyl that's hitting the streets and killing people. But it is also putting a tremendous strain on our resources, on our police resources, on our schools, on the resources we're paying for homeless Washingtonians. And so he has been covering for Turning Point USA, an immigration crisis playing out in our own backyard. We'll get to that coming up next. But first, it is just about the new year, 2024. Can't even believe it. If you are reevaluating your family budget, it might be a good time to reevaluate your insurance. Everyone needs insurance. Mike and I, when we were ready to get married, we were like, gosh, we better get all our insurance on the same page. So what do? We took the First Mark Challenge. We took the First Mark Challenge and told him, hey, we're way underinsured. You got to help us out, but we don't want to pay an arm and a leg for it. And First Mark ended up finding us better insurance for the same price. It was a win-win. Dave Taylor is the CEO of First Mark. It's locally based. He's been doing this a long time. Marine veteran, so he's got strong, strong moral character. He says, look, the product we offer is great. The service we offer is great. But if you're hoping for a quote from us in 15 minutes or less, you're not going to get it.
How much time did it take for you?
Couple hours.
Okay. So total. All in a couple hours, yep. From the time we gather the information, do the presentation and go through everything. It's a couple hours of time. Yeah. Right. And so, and I would say that's probably on the high end.
Yeah.
Right.
It ranges. We were chatty. We were very chatty.
A little bit chatty. Yes, exactly. Anywhere from an hour to 2 hours is the investment in time to find out. And there's no obligation. There's no extra fees if you become a First Mark client. We are paid the same way every other insurance agency in the state of Washington is paid. We're paid by the insurance company that is the writer of your business. And so, yeah, there's nothing to lose.
Yeah, and I promise you, once you become a member of the First Mark family, you're going to be a member of the First Mark family for life. Mike and I already love it. It's only been 6 months. It takes so much stress and time off the table for us. And every single year, they're going to reevaluate your insurance, see if they can't get you a better price, see if you've got the right insurance for whatever's going on in your life. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The most important part is they work for you. All right, taking care of business first. Nicole, how many swear words was it?
Well, you swore twice, but people have already picked it up for you. So.
Have they?
Yeah.
Both of them?
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, I think I owe. Sorry, Lucky and Mackenzie. No fancy dog food for you. I still think I owe the swear jar a little bit of money.
Well, Sally gave you $2 for the swear jar fund, and then Nicole's cat gave $1.99.
They're just ones, so don't act like I have a lot of money, because they're just $1 bills.
Where have you
worth
been?
It. Where have I been? Obviously not the strip club, or I wouldn't have $1 bills.
Unless you're the stripper.
I keep trying to throw this off the table and it's not working. It's Republican, Democrats.
It's pretty.
I sat up all night. The ACLU is what really gets me. The ACLU is what really got me. Democrats, I've learned to expect that much. You're going to say it hurts working Washingtonians. Mm-hmm. Lie through your teeth about what the initiatives do. And I'll get to at the end of the show today, something else they said about it that is so mind-boggling. It's like, how do you even wrap your mind around who is running that account? For the love of all things holy.
And but it's just the ACLU. No other Democrat spoke out about it. It's crazy.
Well, and that's the thing is like, where are, and I bet you Steve Hobbs will, the Secretary of State, because when we were being intimidated over the summer, over referendum 101, mm-hmm. they did go out and reiterate that, hey, intimidating people who are collecting signatures yep. is against the law. The law needs to be strengthened. I am all for people's First Amendment rights. I'm all for that. Mm-hmm. But if we had, for instance, polling locations still in Washington state, you wouldn't allow protesters to stand outside polling locations and to tell you and to scare you into who to vote for. You wouldn't allow it. And so allowing people to go up to these tables where signatures are being collected and intimidate them and harass them out of doing this, that's not right. It's not right if it's Republicans doing it. It's not right if it's Democrats doing it. The only thing is, it's usually Republicans doing it because Republicans are in the minority. So mm-hmm. they're the ones who are going to be, running initiatives to repeal things. That's the only recourse they have left. That's the only recourse that people have left. So it's all wrong to me. It's all backward. The moral consistency issue is huge. And it's a moral inconsistency issue.
Inconsistency,
That's why I gave Adam Smith, Congressman Adam Smith, so much credit on the show the other day for having the moral clarity to call out members of his own party for what their equivocation on Hamas. Mm-hmm. Because that in this climate is very difficult to do for some reason. But unless we can get back to that, then everything's a failure. Then nothing's going to go right. Because you're judging people based on some loose political affiliation, based on what they do and what they say. Lost me.
It's wild.
It's wild.
It's wild.
We have a lot more content coming up on the show today. We have so much to get to. I'm sorry. It's just like my heart's racing, maybe because I had this too much coffee this morning, but also because I'm genuinely upset by it.
And a few listeners have pointed out that the hotline seems to be working for some and not working for others. So some get a voicemail and some of them say it's down right now.
Well, so. I'll also point out we didn't put it. Do you want to pull up that first graphic again? Because I didn't point it out. This is like how much attention to detail the Washington State Democratic Party has. Their tweet was 1, decline to sign. 2, spread the word. 2, call the hotline. Then they give the wrong hotline number. So the right hotline number, which again, you dirty rascals, don't call the number and report fake locations. 425-553-2157. It would sure be a shame if that hotline was rendered absolutely useless by people calling in and reporting false locations of signature gatherers. If they want to play dirty, we can play dirty too. And I told people there was a lot of people calling in and just sort of like messing with them. I was like, don't do that. Make it realistic. You know, we've got, there's some signature gatherers. It's something about anti-tax. It's outside the so-and-so in this area. Send them on a wild goose chase. I mean, don't. Sorry. Don't send them on a wild goose chase. Don't do that. Don't use up their resources and their time and their money doing that. That would be wrong. Ah.
And spread them out.
Wrong.
Maybe one today, one out.
Don't spread them out. Don't send them to obscure locations days apart. Don't. All right, let's move on. Okay. Our friend Jonathan Cho, he covers a lot of issues pertaining to homelessness, obviously. And now he's finding this intersection between the homeless crisis and the immigration crisis, the migrant crisis. We have individuals, it hasn't been as high profile as, say, what's happening in New York City with the busing of migrants, but we have migrants that are ending up here. Jonathan Cho, and he filed this report, he's an independent journalist who works with Discovery Institute, but he actually filed this report for Turning Point USA as part of their coverage, and it's absolutely fascinating. So there's a church in Tukwila where migrants are coming up from the southern border, winding up there, and they're putting a strain not only on the church that's housing them, but on local resources like police, schools, and resources that are supposed to be going and have been going to Washington's homeless. Here's a part of one of the reports he's filed on this issue.
Riverton Park United Methodist Church is more than just a Sunday ministry.
I love you.
It's a 24/7 sanctuary and campground for the homeless in Tukwila, just a few miles outside of Seattle.
We need housing for these folks. We need them to not be in tents.
And now Pastor Jan Bowlerjack is being challenged to show even more grace and generosity to those in need.
They somehow get this phone number, this address, and they show up here.
Along with the homeless already here, nearly 400 migrants.
I've gotten calls from the southern border.
Are now staying in tents and makeshift shelters.
Are the homeless and the migrants getting along?
Takes effort, but yes.
Almost all the men, women, and children are from Venezuela or Angola, and they barely speak English.
Parlez-vous français?
Oui, français.
Only français, okay.
And they've been here for almost a year.
They're kids, they're sweeping, there's so much going on.
There is. Aren't they beautiful?
When the pastor recently gave me a tour, it felt like controlled chaos. Most of the kids have cell phones and pass the time playing video games. The church kitchen is constantly being used.
Fufu. No fufu. This bread, okay.
Bowlerjack says they have official papers to temporarily stay in the U.S. while seeking asylum.
They're men and women who are jumping over with kids who don't have paperwork either.
I don't know about them. I don't have them here.
Complicating matters. In some cases, there's a 2-year backlog to get cases heard in immigration court.
We can't take any more.
But she's refusing to turn people away.
If a family shows up, standing at my door, we take them.
But even with all the goodwill, the emerging problems are hard to ignore. I've obtained police records showing more than 100 dispatch calls to the church in the past year.
I do have a problem with that.
Incidents include responses for rape, 3 suicides, burglaries, auto theft, unwanted subjects on the property, harassment, lewd conduct, and vandalism. This is exclusive video showing a series of fights and arguments happening inside the church and clashes over cultural differences between the Angolans and Venezuelans are now a regular occurrence. This woman who goes by Maria stays in a tent and wanted me to hide her identity.
No nos sentimos a salvo.
When we try to report or something, any problem, they don't take our case.
She says there are even more problematic incidents, but church staff members are pressuring them not to speak up.
So do you feel like the pastor is trying to cover up the problems or downplay the problems?
She's very clear and consistent, asking us to keep the problems low. Deal with her only, don't call the police.
Pastor Bowlerjack did not respond to these allegations after I left the church, so I asked Tukwila PD for a breakdown on exactly who's responsible for what, but that data was unavailable. I also reached out to UMC leaders at the regional level to get some answers, but no response there either.
No respect for personal property.
For neighbors who live near the church, they're losing patience with the lack of transparency.
Pastor Jan just keeps trying to smooth things over.
And say the situation is spiraling out of control.
Yeah. And Jonathan has talked to, you know, the mayor of Tukwila. He's been able to, you know, really try to get a grasp on the extent to which their presence is further aggravating what is already a crisis with homelessness from people who were here. So we asked Jonathan Cho to come in because this is, you know, we've had him on the show before to talk about homelessness, but this is such a complex wrinkle to that crisis. We asked him to come in, talk about his reporting and some of the things that he's found. Jonathan Cho, welcome back to Undivided.
Thanks for having me.
Who would have thought you'd been covering the migrant crisis in Washington State?
Yeah, there's a lot of crossover into the homeless crisis as well, because one of the big issue being brought up right now by homeless advocates is that the resources now being poured into this migrant crisis is taking away from the homeless response here in America.
Yeah. Well, we see, you know, I think New York gets a lot of attention lately for how they've been overrun by people who are coming up from the southern border. So as we talk about this story, are these individuals who are being, what, bused here, brought here from the southern border or no?
It all depends. It's a wide spectrum. Last count, there were nearly 400 people at Riverton Park United Methodist Church in Tukwila. They've been there now for almost a year. And even the pastor, Pastor Jan Bowlerjack, when I asked her point blank, where are all these people coming from? She told me she didn't know. They were coming in from all over the place. Look, bottom line, these migrants crossed illegally into America at some point. They ended up in Seattle. One anecdote, though, I heard, and I'm saving this story for, coming up in the next few weeks, is a young woman and her child initially were in Denver. But they were dealing with some scary, you know, criminal situation. So then a nonprofit essentially paid for their ticket and flew them to Seattle and said it's safer in Seattle. There are more resources in Seattle. So more to come on that story.
Wow. So how did you start to look into this? Why did you start to look into this?
Well, my DMs, as usual, started, stacking up. I got messages from people on the ground, advocates, neighbors saying, hey, look, local Seattle media, once again, not covering this properly. It's not just about this church being generous, and they are no doubt being generous, this church community, to allow the migrants to stay here. But what they talked to me about and reached out to me about was the spike in 911 calls, the crimes, the trash, the litter, and one thing led to another. And I started to realize once I showed up that this situation was spiraling out of control.
And when you say, you know, the trash 911 calls litter, is that just anecdotal based on what you've been told, or do the numbers bear that out with crime, et cetera?
Not only did I make a public disclosure request to get all the 911 calls from the past year, I'm seeing the trash with my own eyes, the buildup. It's just flowing into the neighborhood, the trash from the camp flowing into the streets. Now, no doubt the church and Pastor Bowlerjack, they're trying to keep the facilities clean, but you know, there's a sanitation issue now going on. But getting back to the 911 calls, I mean, you have calls for, you know, attempted rape. You have calls for suicides. You have calls for theft, burglary, fights, harassment, vandalism. This stuff isn't getting out there right now.
Now, when you say 911 calls, just so I know that there's a tie here, is it to that address?
To that address,
gotcha.
To that church.
Wow.
And I asked the city point blank, and they acknowledge it. And here's the challenging part of this story. Most of these migrants who are from Angola or Venezuela, they don't speak English.
Okay.
It's either Spanish or French, right? So things are getting lost in translation. But collectively, what everyone is saying, the people I've talked to, and I've talked to now dozens of migrants with translators on the ground, they're telling me right now that church leadership is telling them to not talk or complain about these issues.
Well, and that's what I want to start with before we get in, because you've had to rely on kind of whistleblowers. So although you're acknowledging the church is being very generous, the church and the church's church, they don't want you there. They don't want you to be reporting on it.
Yeah, you know, it's this church is part of the United Methodist Church denomination. And of course, my process, as you know, is to reach out to all sides. I've not only reached out to the pastor, who initially spoke to me, I reached out to the UMC regional offices and even national. And what's crazy is that they didn't respond to me at all. So I thought, okay, typical, hey, no comment on the story. Mm-hmm. But I later found out through sources who leaked an email to me, an internal email, showing that there is a systematic plan to ice me out now. There's an email that I've obtained from UMC saying, don't talk to Jonathan Cho.
Specifically. And it was translated into multiple languages.
Yep.
That's, I mean, how does it make you feel?
I don't know. I think as a journalist, the first question is, why send out an email like this?
Right.
I just want to get your side of the story. So then the next question is, are you trying to hide something?
Yeah.
What are you sending an email like this out for?
So you have released and obtained some videos from inside that church.
Yeah.
To you, what does it depict?
What it really shows is that there is clearly a cultural divide here. You have migrants literally from different countries all trying to figure it out. And I get it. They're trying to survive. But with any culture, even American culture, you're going to have fights, disagreements. And, you know, these migrants, interestingly enough, almost all of them have cell phones. So they've been recording each other. And we're talking about fights, arguments, people saying that the Angolans have too much time in the kitchen. You have, you know, some of the advocates for the Venezuelans saying that the Venezuelans aren't getting enough time, you know, inside and indoors. So it's just this hot mess, and they're recording it, and they leak some of those videos to me.
What's another layer on this? The church tried to stop those leaks, you believe, by getting rid of internet access.
Yeah, that was another piece of this story initially. After, you know, we started looking into the story, our sources on the ground, again, who are helping the migrants, came to me and said, Jonathan, there's a blackout now. Because they think you're snooping around and they don't want more of these videos to go out. Again, that's what these sources were telling me. And in fact, I asked the pastor point blank, did you cut the internet? She admitted to cutting it, but she denied that was the reason. She just said, hey, we cut the internet. And oh, by the way, it's now back.
So they cut off these people's, I mean, to the outside world, because presumably, I think common sense dictates why would they do that other than to stop the leaks that are happening?
Yeah, and these migrants, at the end of the day, they're survivors. They figure how to get information out. Some of them would leave the premises and find a Wi-Fi connection and start talking to me or texting me.
Mm-hmm.
But again, there's now this overall kind of sense now, top down, that if you talk about the bad things, even bad things happening to you, you know, you will face retaliation, or you will not get the benefits that other migrants are getting.
Mm-hmm. So you had mentioned that there's not really a plan for them, but you also talked about how helping them is cutting into helping people who are homeless on the streets here. So can you talk about the intersection of that? I mean, there's, you know, there's empty hotels that can't they go to those, or, you know, that were bought for homeless individuals that are empty anyway?
So here's, once again, something that I saw over the weekend that's been so frustrating for homeless advocates. Right now, it's getting cold, and no one should be living outside, especially migrants. But there are also homeless Americans outside on the streets of Seattle, and they're being told that there's no housing. Mm-hmm. They're being told there's no room in the hotel rooms.
How can there be no room? How can there be no house?
And yet, nearly 100 migrants on Sunday, and I recorded this, and I followed them, were bused to the DoubleTree Hotel in SeaTac and now have rooms. So think about it. If you're homeless or you're a homeless advocate desperately trying to get men and women off the streets of Seattle, Americans, you're thinking, why are the migrants getting preferential treatment? And where is this money suddenly coming from that didn't exist before?
Where is it coming from?
Well, good question. Initially, the pastor said that, you know, it was private donations and the church was helping. Also, you know, former Seattle, well, I guess she still is a Seattle City Council member, Teresa Mosqueda, who's now the new King County Council member, mm-hmm. incoming, she was able to secure some funding. King County Council member Dave Updegrove also secured $50,000. And
taxpayer funds.
Taxpayer funds. Mm-hmm. So that's at least what I've been able to find right now. I've done a lot of public disclosures. I'm still looking into this. But the play now is to get federal funding. That's what everybody is waiting for right now. And again, another story that I'm looking into and I'll talk about here is that I have sources on the ground who are connected to a board. There is a board right now that is sort of overseeing the decision-making of where to put the migrants. And you have a contingent on this board that wants to put migrants into tiny houses. Mm-hmm. But then you have another saying, we have hotels open. Why don't we put them in there? So there's now a clash about housing as well.
Is the board private nonprofit? Is it a government board?
Well, what I'm being told is that it is a sort of makeshift board. It is nonprofit. It has one housing advocate on it, and the rest are sort of immigrant advocates as well. Look, they're there to help, you know, direct traffic, you know, and you know, how to get people into housing as quick as possible. Yeah. So that's why it was created.
And of course, in the background of all of this is these are people who came to the country illegally, your understanding is. So do they have cases pending for review? Are they here as asylum seekers?
Yes. So So the pastor says that all the people that she's housing have the actual paperwork. These are the so-called migrants. They are here seeking asylum. Okay. I've even seen some of their paperwork.
So if that's the case, they didn't come in illegally. They came in through an asylum process that is, albeit flawed.
Well, they will admit, many of them will admit they came in illegally, then secured the paperwork to get in line for asylum.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So at this point, yes, technically they are now migrants seeking asylum, but they did come in illegally into America at some point, at least most of them.
I mean, do you think that they have legitimate asylum claims, or is this just abuse of the system?
You know, we'll have to wait and see, because the other problem here is now immigration court is backed up to 2 years, 3 years in some cases.
Yeah.
So they're going to be here. So I think that's the bottom line, and that's the dilemma, right? Look, you have one camp where they're saying, these people came in illegally. Why should we be, you know, rolling out the red carpet for them? You have another camp saying, well, yeah, they're here now. They're human beings. We got to help them. So that's the dilemma.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, I think you can be a little bit of two sides. I think you can have, as your coverage does, you can have empathy for them, right? And also not have empathy for the real disastrous state of our immigration system. And this is going to touch every community in the country.
Yeah, and thanks for bringing that up. You know, my coverage, you know, I try to objectively take on a story fairly and accurately. And there are migrants here who are being preyed upon. They're victims. They need help, okay? There's sexual abuse happening. There's domestic violence happening in this camp. At the same time, you know, there are situations where you have migrants gaming the system. So I'm trying to show all the angles here.
Yeah. Jonathan Cho, great work. Thank you for being here, and we're going to follow the story on the immigrants because you're the only one reporting on it.
Yeah, thank you. We really do need the rest of Seattle media to get on this because we've just scratched the surface.
Yeah, I wouldn't hold your breath for the rest of Seattle media to get on this. But a couple other interesting wrinkles to his reporting. He found out through some emails that Governor Jay Inslee was actually supposed to go to I don't know if you call it an encampment at this church, but he was supposed to go visit the church last week, and then he didn't. His staff said there was a scheduling issue. So I don't know if that's true or if there was another reason he didn't want to go. And then Jonathan also had an update, which Nicole got an email about, a sort of tip, and it just happened to be that we were talking about this story today. There, last night or the night before, a baby girl was born to a Venezuelan migrant inside a tent on the grounds of Riverton Church. So, I mean, that's devastating, obviously. You don't want to see any mother give birth in a tent. Certainly it happens in homeless camps in Seattle, not infrequently. So there's just a lot of kind of wrinkles to this story. And Jonathan, on his, if you follow him on Twitter, @Chosho, he continues to post videos and follow this crisis, which I think has been woefully underreported by Seattle media. So I'm really glad that he's on top of it. All right, coming up in our segment, Unbelievable, overregulation is pricing Washingtonians out of the housing market. We'll be joined by the Building Industry Association of Washington. But first, are you doom spending? As I just threw what I just throw ones at Nicole, that was doom spending, I guess. This was a phenomenon that was talked about in some of the economic reporters after holiday spending, that despite what we know about some of the indicators that the economy is not in a good place, holiday spending has been great. Black Friday, Cyber Monday, it's been fantastic. And some of them are calling that phenomenon doom spending, meaning that you've got some Americans who are, you know, so nihilistic about the state of the economy that they don't even care anymore and they're just throwing money at things. We asked Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital, who we have on the show every week, whether he thinks that's a real phenomenon and what it might mean about whether a recession is coming or not.
We look into finance and economics and all that kind of stuff. There's just a very large part of it that's based on human behavior, and I don't think enough people give that enough attention. And I think it's kind of an extension off what a good buddy of mine refers to as financial nihilism. Getting $5,000 checks in the mail, government handouts. I think it's created a swath of younger folks, usually, you know, 35, 30, somewhere in there and younger, that have become rather nihilistic about a lot of things. And it doesn't surprise me at all that that extends to spending. I do think that things like that are delaying the recession or have delayed it. I think it's starting. I mean, it appears to be starting now or starting in the near future.
Yeah. And also we've seen a lot of credit card debt that people have not been able to pay, and that's ramping up. So it seems like those two things might be related in some way. But this is all stuff that Zach Abraham talks about on his radio show, KnowYourRiskRadio.com, KnowYourRiskRadio.com. And if you like what Zach has to say on the show every week, he and his team at Bulwark Capital Management, they specialize in risk management. They specialize in times like this where they are trying to protect your retirement portfolio from the risk associated with today's economy. So it might be worth reaching out to Zach and his team at Bulwark. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. All right. Washington leaders complain a lot about a lack of affordable housing. And I think there's good reason for that. We have a lack of affordable housing in Washington state. And we have a lack of affordable housing for the working class in this state. Home prices are insane. So many Washingtonians are being priced out of the dream of home ownership. But at the same time that politicians in Washington state complain about that, they are overregulating the building industry in a way that makes it less affordable to build affordable housing. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop, a couple days ago on the show, we talked about how Washington State is trying to make it nearly impossible to be able to have gas appliances in your home. You know, it is a war on gas stoves. I hate to put it that simplistically. But there was a heat pump mandate that they had pushed through, got caught up in some legal stuff. And so instead of an absolute heat pump mandate for new home buildings, they actually went and made it, you know, so expensive, and they put so much regulation in place where it's almost impossible not to have to install a heat pump and an electric heat pump rather than go with gas. And so we wanted to reach out to the Building Industry Association of Washington. Jan Heimbaugh came on to talk to us about not only what the heat pump mandate means for new home construction in Washington, but also about this broader environment of overregulation that is creating scenarios so contrary to what our elected leaders claim to care about. Jan Heimbaugh, welcome to Undivided.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So is this about the heat pumps, or is it about what the heat pumps represent?
It's definitely about what the heat pumps represent. I don't think it's the heat pump manufacturers here. I think it's about an agenda that doesn't care about the cost of housing in Washington.
Yeah. Have you, I mean, I'm assuming you have, do you know about how much, so there was the initial requirement that would have basically said, put those bad boys in. And now the idea is let's make it so difficult to do anything else that you kind of have to put the heat pumps in. Do you know what the cost associated with that is for a new housing construction?
Our estimate on a fully electric home is what they want is about $9,000, give or take. And that's assuming you can actually get a heat pump, because we have supply chain issues across the country on all this stuff. It assumes that the electrical capacity for the home is there. And then if you're going to use natural gas to put a natural gas stove in to cook your food, to, you know, roast a poblano or something, it's about $30,000.
Oh, wow. Okay. Roast a poblano. You're very fancy. But yes, yeah, I mean, well, you can't do that on electric top. So,
nope.
No. So we talk so much about affordable housing in this state and trying to make sure working class people can buy a home. How does this impact that?
It blows it out of the water. We're already sort of blown out of the water. Current housing prices, new and existing homes, just 85-87% of Washington households cannot afford a median priced house in this state already. So you add $9,000, $30,000 onto the cost of the home, and you're just totally, totally exploding the cost and the access to home ownership. And even it increases rents too. So it's a real, problem and a real blind spot for saying we want to do this good stuff over here, but we're going to just ensure that people can't afford housing. And, you know, let's just, so it's the hold my beer portion of we need a more affordable housing. And then the state's like, okay, well, hold my beer. We're going to make it even worse.
Yeah. So you mentioned, you know, there are also supply chain issues at play here. And we know that, you know, in addition to the actual real cost, the monetary cost of putting one of these things in or, you know, paying to not put it in, are there time delays that this is going to add, permitting delays that this is going to add?
I'm sure there's time delays this is going to add. Our permitting delays in this state are already sort of all over the map, problematic, on average at $30,000 to the cost of a home. You know, an increased requirements mean inspections take longer because there's more things to check and more things to tack on. The other thing at play right now is interest is higher than it was a couple years ago. And so 8%, 7.5% interest is about 2.5 times the cost of the initial cost over the life of a mortgage. So you add $1,000 on to the cost of a house, that's really $2,500. So you're adding $30,000 on, it's 2.5 times that over the cost. So it's just like this compounding factor. We've got supply chain issues. We've got transformer supply issues. It's not just about the heat pumps. It's about transformers. And transformers in neighborhoods, some of them can, you know, now provide energy for 6 to 9 houses. You do this in all electric houses, and now you're maybe powering 2 houses with a transformer. And so you need more transformers. We've had a transformer supply issue. So there's like a lot of down ticket or down sort of stream issues that come into like getting houses built in an affordable way so we can house the people of our state.
Yeah. Is there any recourse left on this for you guys?
So, you know, the legislature has ultimate power here. They do have the power to tell the building code council to do something different. We will be pushing that. We'll be asking for not implementing this code. We'll be asking to just go to the model 2024 code. Our state does this wild mashup of a little bit of the national model code and a little bit of our own little flavor of nonsense. If we just went to the 2024 code, our builders could be easily eligible for tax refunds and tax rebates. It still gets us to our energy efficiency goals in our state, but in new construction, not overall, but just gets us to the goals that we've said we've wanted, but in an easier, better pathway, a more affordable pathway. So we'll be asking for that. But then there's also sort of the fact that this doesn't comply with federal law when it comes to EPCA or the Environmental Policy and Conservation Act federally, does not comply. So there is also possible legal recourse that we will be discussing. And, you know, this was just adopted last week, so we've got to go through sort of jotting our crossing our T's and dotting our I's and making sure that everything is in play. But we are considering all of our options, whether they're administrative, legislative, or legal.
Yeah, and I'll just end with this, because we talk a lot on this show about sort of, you know, you've got one party rule and then all these systems and appointees and stuff that were all appointed by the same governor over 11 years, almost 12 years. I mean, the Building Code Council is a bunch of Inslee appointees, with the exception of two people, right, who, you know, the trades want on there. So I guess if you've got a bunch of Inslee appointees and then a Democrat-controlled House and Senate, it seems like they wouldn't be inclined to overrule something that council has put in place. Or am I misreading that?
I think it's going to be a difficult road to hoe, but I mean, I think it's time for folks to put their money where their mouth is. We have a housing crisis in this state. And if we actually want to make strides in addressing private construction and public construction, this impacts every single type of housing unit that we supply in this house. So our tax dollars for subsidized housing and our government built housing is way more, where our dollar goes less far there, and then our dollar in the private sector goes less far as well. And we continue to price people out, so they have an over-reliance on the overspending of government housing. So it's this whole sort of issue. So we're really hoping that folks are serious about reducing the cost of building houses, so our neighbors can actually afford to have a roof over their head and put their kids in bed at night, and Santa can come down the chimney. It's hard to get in through a ductless mini split for Santa, so... You know,
you're my favorite. But look, this is why it's not the sexiest subject. All let's talk about heat pump mandates. But when you have to get people to consider why, you know, we're all concerned with affordability and not being able to, you know, work a full time job, two income household, and not be able to afford a house in this state. People need to understand the little things in the grand scheme of things that contribute to that. And this is one of them.
It is absolutely one of them. I mean, even if you were able to put in a natural gas stove because you decided you want to pay not only for the housing infrastructure, 30 grand on your house, but the additional infrastructure to extend the line because no one else in your neighborhood wants it because it's 30 extra grand plus, so you're paying the extra pipeline fee as well. You know, that they're also making you put in a plug next to every single natural gas appliance in your house so that when they force you to go to electric, you can easily plug in. So you're doing two sort of energy heat guts inside the house as well. It is absolutely bonkers and is incredibly damaging to the American dream.
You know what? As an American, I have every damn right to roast a poblano on my gas stove without paying 30 grand plus for it, Jan.
That's right. That's an expensive poblano. People need to eat, you know, and people need to heat their homes. We haven't even talked about the fact of backup energy for our friends in Eastern Washington who do have cold snaps and the power goes out. How do you have backup heat to keep people alive in the winter or people cool in the summer? And these are real issues that are just completely been swept under the rug in addition to the costs. Standards of living is going to go down, and we are going to hurt the people of Washington.
Yeah. We laugh about it so we don't cry, because it is absurd.
Right.
It's big government at its worst. Jan, we really appreciate you guys coming on and explaining this to us in a way that's easy to understand and also fun. And we'll have you back on as this sort of progresses throughout the legislative session.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Brandy.
Yeah, we appreciate Jan Heimbaugh with the Building Industry Association of Washington. Only on Undivided can you laugh about heat pump mandates. But at the same time, I mean, you talk about affordable housing. You cannot build affordable housing if it's not affordable to build. As Jan said, it's robbing people of the American dream. It is over-regulating an industry that can help, can be a good partner with the state of Washington in dealing with our affordable housing crisis. But the state of Washington doesn't want good private sector partners. They want to tell the private sector what to do. They want to tax them. They want to over-regulate them. And they want to screw all of us over. So this is just one of those examples of something that seems small, but it's not. It's expensive, and it has really, really widespread consequences. And it is unbelievable. All right, we'll dip outside of Washington State just briefly. Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal is responding to the criticism over her equivocation on Hamas atrocities, including rape. But first, I've been talking about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. Don't wait a day longer. Don't wait to embark on a new wellness journey until the new year, New Year's resolutions that last for 2 weeks and then just fail because you tied it to just some irrelevant date. I started the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan November 1st of last year. By the end of the year, before when everybody else was making their New Year's 2023 resolutions, I was already down 30 pounds. I was feeling great. I'm down 37 pounds total. The program, they teach you what to eat in the right portions and then how to maintain that weight loss for life without feeling like you're on some sort of endless diet. No prepackaged meals, no counting calories, no drugs or injections. So reach out to Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team today. Don't wait till New Year's Eve. Definitely don't wait till New Year's Eve because then you'll be drunk. And I don't think Dr. Ryan Coogan wants to do a 15-minute consultation with you when you're hammered. Or maybe he does. He's a fun guy. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Okay, Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, she issued a statement on, we played this, I believe it was on the show yesterday or the day before. She went on State of the Union on CNN with Dana Bash. Dana Bash was trying to ask her about why some progressive women have been so quiet on the rapes and atrocities against women committed by Hamas. And Congresswoman Jayapal sort of started to answer, and then she brought it right back to Israel. And then Dana Bash tried to tell her, like, hey, I was talking about this, and you brought it back to Israel, and then she tried to answer and she brought it right back to Israel. And so she was condemned pretty widely for the way she handled that interview. She's now put out a statement in the interest of fairness. I'm going to read that entire statement to you. She said, "Let me be completely clear again that I unequivocally condemn Hamas's use of rape and sexual violence as an act of war. This is horrific, and across the world we must stand with our sisters, families, and survivors of rape and sexual assault everywhere to condemn this violence and hold perpetrators accountable. What I said on Sunday in speaking about Hamas and rape was, quote, I have condemned what Hamas has done. I've condemned all the actions. Rape is horrific. Sexual assault is horrific. It is what I believe, and I will continue to condemn the atrocities committed by Hamas and continue to call for Hamas's defeat. My comment about balance was not about rape and not intended to minimize rape and sexual assault in any way. It was about recognizing the tremendous pain and trauma of so many Israelis, Palestinians, and communities in this terrible war. I understand that I have critics who disagree with me on policy, but for them to insinuate that I would think, say, or act in any way that equivocates on rape is outrageous and completely inconsistent with my record and life's work. It also deeply hurts the ability to have meaningful conversations about critical issues. The pain that Israelis and Palestinians are feeling today is raw and very present. I know that many on all sides are feeling abandoned and unseen, and it is important to acknowledge all that pain. I intend to continue to speak out about these issues and how we can achieve long-term political solution." And I'm going to allow her statement to stand. You know how I feel about this, how I have felt about what I do feel like is an equivocation on, you know, what Hamas did versus how Israel chose to defend itself. But again, in the interest of fairness, that is what she has to say about the widely criticized appearance on CNN. Okay, we'll get to your questions and comments coming up next, including an explanation for our daily subscriber poll. It might have seemed a little unusual to you, so I want to explain why I asked the question that I asked. But first, the struggle is real right now for landlords. Man, if you are a mom or pop landlord in Seattle, again, we laugh so we don't cry. If you're in Seattle or Tacoma, you're probably thinking, should I keep it? Should I keep it or should I sell it? With these really strict landlord-tenant protections, we've heard the horror stories and we're hearing more and more of them every day. It turns out that Wes Jones, our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com, he is a small landlord in Tacoma. And so we brought him on the show to weigh in on this issue.
We continue to see more and more aggressive landlord-tenant laws being passed in favor of the tenant rights. Like, you go down to Tacoma, mm-hmm. we are practically back at those, you know, COVID anti-eviction restrictions with what they have passed down there, if you really want to jump through the hoops and work the system. Except what's not available right now is the help for landlords should one of those people choose not to pay. And I'm saying choose not to pay because there are plenty of people who are choosing not to pay. It's not that they can't, they choose not to.
Yeah, and he said that he's probably going to end up diversifying. He's got a few rental properties, not a lot, but a handful. And so, you know, he says he's thinking every single day whether he should sell his properties in Tacoma. So if you're a small landlord who's in that position wondering, gosh, do I just sell the thing? Reach out to Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com. Not only can he help you with that, but he's also got a lot of information and insight on that particular issue and can help you walk through the process. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, really quickly, the subject of our daily subscriber poll today probably seemed like a weird one, but I wanted you to know if you're a subscriber on Patreon or Locals, it's really just for my edification. I asked, what political party do you consider yourself a member of, Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, or none? Mostly because I want to see how many viewers and listeners we have who do not consider themselves loyal to a particular political party. So please, if you haven't already, go take that poll for me. And right now, At least when I'm looking over at Patreon, 45% say they don't consider themselves a member of any of those political parties. Although we have a disproportionate number of libertarians who listen to our show as well, which doesn't particularly surprise me. Again, I'm like 98% libertarian, but it's more so sometimes they go too far on some of the, you know, drug, their ideas around drugs and stuff.
It does worry me sometimes, though, because I believe most of those people would also consider themselves maybe conservative or leaning to the right. Mm-hmm. And it splits the party, right? That's why we have this problem with too many candidates, or, you know, people getting so far behind a candidate and then, you know, attacking another candidate.
You mean the fact that libertarians exist? Or
No, just that. I feel like people don't want to identify as Republicans. So then they're like, oh, I'm in this camp. And then they find these like extreme candidates, like the Semi-Birds maybe, or like the, you know, Lauren Culp's. And then they get so deep into that then they kind of attack other candidates that are in the races. And then it becomes this like very, very divisive environment on the right.
Yeah. Whereas I do think Democrats have a little more, what is the word? Discipline. Yes. They have a little more discipline, which probably works in their favor. Now, I don't mind a party that has a lot of independent-minded people.
I appreciate it. We just have to learn how to channel it, I guess.
They have to learn how to channel it. That's together. Not my job.
No, you too. I just mean, like, bring the party. I mean, and that's what I think we try to do here on the show. But bring the party together and say, you know, what do you want and how are you going to get the closest thing to that, right?
I mean, I don't care if the Republican Party comes together per se. I do want there to be balance, but I'm not a Republican, so it's really not
the right. I want the right to come together.
You said we.
I'm saying we because I'm meaning us on the right. I think the right, because I would consider myself more of an independent, I would say. And I would say that we just need to come together as people that are on the right. And when we get a candidate, really support that candidate. Because I think there's too many cooks in the kitchen sometimes. And then it gets divided. And the left doesn't seem to have that problem.
They don't look at what they're doing to Mark Mullett. Like, they're just, it's as if he doesn't exist to the state Democratic Party. It's like, Bob Ferguson. And he's just like.
Right. And when there's the AOCs and the Sawants and things like that, they're just like, okay, well, that's our guy.
Yeah. Nicole Thomas Kennedy. You think cops are serial killers? You're our chick. It's like, okay, whatever you say. All right, let's get to questions and comments. Sally S. with $2 for the swear jar fund. Oh my gosh. Nicole's cat with $1.99 for the swear jar. All right, Thank you, guys.
There's a lot of cat talk on the feed today. I'm trying to find comments and there's all cat stuff.
Slow Nomo says this topic is worthy of swearing. Charles says, wouldn't it be a legit statement that you're being surveilled? There are cameras everywhere all the time. And would we want cameras protecting the drop boxes? Wouldn't it be a legitimate statement that we're being surveilled? There are cameras everywhere all the time. And would we want cameras protecting? I mean, there might be cameras that are fixed on drop boxes.
I kind of am thinking like him. I'm not sure how that qualifies as the same kind of intimidation. Because if you have somebody in your face making you feel a certain way, as opposed to a sign, whether it applies to you or not, is up to you. Yeah. If you're going to drop off some fake ballots and knowing a camera's watching, great.
It's unnecessary. It's unnecessary. And I do think that it can have the effect of intimidation. So I'm not going to sit here and excuse.
Who's it intimidating?
Well, I'm saying intimidation's in the eye of the beholder. So if you walk up, I think it's completely contrary to the whole point we made to excuse what Republicans did a year ago. To say that this drop box is being surveilled and here's, you know, the law. But you don't think that could come across as intimidating to someone?
I just don't care. Why wouldn't
you don't care?
Well, but why wouldn't you want it to be surveilled? I mean, I'm actually totally okay if there's a camera on the drop box to make sure nobody comes by and like bashes it, goes in and steals anything, goes and drops extras off. Like, why is that scary? Why is that intimidation? I don't understand.
I think it can come across as threatening to have that right there at the drop box saying, this is being surveilled for someone who's like, oh, I'm going to put my ballot in. Like, who's watching me? Who's surveilling me? I think that I see how it would come across as intimidation. But it's not a matter of levels.
I know.
That's the thing is, like, I'm also not comparing what the Democrats are doing to January 6th, although people will say, oh, you're drawing a comparison. No, I'm not. Mm-hmm. January 6th isn't on the same level as this is either. But if you care about protecting the democratic process, making sure people can participate in it without feeling intimidated, feeling watched, feeling harassed, That's what we should all want. It's like, let people vote. Let them do their thing.
Yeah. We're all watched all the time.
That is true. But watched by someone of a certain political affiliation.
Sure.
Look at us disagreeing today. All right. Let me see. Dennis says the tip line is offline. They must have changed it. Do you think so?
Or it just kind of clogged up at the moment. Yeah. You want to try it?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. We got time. Right, what do we have to do? You know? what do I have to do? It's just raining out. First of all, also, this guy has to run out of water at some point, right? It has to. It has to run out of water.
Ask Noah.
Please wait while we connect your call. Thank you for calling to report a petition circulator sighting. Please leave as much detail as possible, including the location, time of day, a description of the circulator, and any other relevant details, along with your contact information. Have a great day.
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know that there's some anti-tax signature gatherers that are over in Walla Walla outside that main hotel downtown, the old one. And so it's really concerning because I don't know if they're, you know, trustworthy. And so I was just wondering if you guys could go to Walla Walla and check that out. Thanks, bye. It seems like it's up and running. So make sure you're calling the right one. Yep. 425-553-2157. Be more prepared to give a fake location than me because I was trying to think of the name of that hotel, but I couldn't. I was trying to send them as far away from Seattle as I possibly could. Okay, let me see here. Martina says, how about the overreach of Measure 1 in the city of Tacoma? Let's do some digging on this, as homeowners were not able to vote on this measure. Why weren't homeowners able to vote on the measure?
Well, because if you're not living there,
you live
in Seattle, you have to vote in Seattle if you live in. So homeowners that owned all of those affordable housing or rentals didn't
if they don't live there.
That.
Yeah. Let me see here. Dave says, I just called the tip line. You get an automated inbox where you're supposed to leave a message. Yes, but leave a message and be more convincing than me don't leave a message that has a specific location in a specific place, because what they do is they dispatch volunteers to go and, you know, surveil and harass people. And so you want them just running in absolute circles. Mm-hmm. Let me see here. Krista said, the people pushing the tattle line are no better than any school-age bully. It's truly disgusting on every level. Sally says, I'm blocked from the Wash Dems on X. I can't see their snitch post. Sally, what'd you do? I'm not even blocked.
Right, I know that.
I'm kind of shocked because a bunch of people who watch this show and who kind of run in political circles, they said that Shasti Conrad, the chair of the state party, has them blocked. She doesn't even have me blocked. I'm shocked. What do I have to do?
Oh, I think she wants to keep an eye on you.
She wants to surveil me?
Yes.
So to speak?
See, that's what I mean. We're being watched anyway.
Yeah, I mean, what does a girl have to do to get blocked around here? Let me see. Roy Otis, our construction project requires a new building transformer 101 weeks for delivery because of a requirement from the state.
Well, it could be supply chain as well.
Well, yeah, but if the state's requiring it and there's a supply chain issue, you have no choice but to wait, right?
Yeah.
That is wild, wild stuff. It's just insane. The state's so backwards. The inability to see the private sector as a partner in solving some of these crises our state has is one of the biggest shortfalls of our state government as it's currently situated. Okay, thank you for the questions and comments per the usual. I want to end the show kind of where we began with our closing sanity check. So as the Washington State Democratic Party tries to convince people that they're right-wing MAGA extremists, if they want to sign any of these initiatives, tries to send people out to harass signature gatherers, be they paid signature gatherers or volunteers. They also have a really interesting way of spinning all of this. So they sent out that snitch line. And then they said this, final thought. The right wing is doing this because they are deeply unpopular in Washington and can't win elections. They want to undo all the legislative progress we've made in Washington. Don't let them get away with it. Decline to sign any ballot initiatives that are circulating right now. If these initiatives are a product of the right wing, and if they are as deeply unpopular as you say they are, then surely you would have no problem with letting voters vote on them. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We can do it. we can do it. But the game is on. I mean, this is, I will again die on this hill. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. Thank you for being supporters of the show. If you have not signed up to support the show already, we're going into a critical election year. There's going to be a lot of legislative coverage to get done. We could use your financial support if you have not provided it already. It's just $5 a month. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. And if you don't sign up, you are right-wing MAGA extremists. And I'm starting a snitch line. I'm going to snitch on all of you who are watching the show for free.
All right, it's almost over.
Is it done?
Oh, okay. It's almost over.
I'm just kidding. JK, love you. Bye.